Welcome to the Manasquan School District Board of Education Combined Committee of the Whole Meeting and Regular Public Board of Education Meeting for June 16, 2020. Due to the statewide prohibition of public gatherings, this meeting will be held virtually and streamed live to the public. Please visit www.manasquanschools.org for information on how to view and participate. Call to order, 48-hour notice. Opening statement. Pursuant to NJSA 10:4-10, notice of this meeting has been provided by publication in the Asbury Park Press, the Coast Star.
Dennis Ingolia.
The Coast Star.
Is now exiting.
And posted in the Borough Hall of Manasquan and the public schools within the time limits prescribed by law. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of
the United States of America,
and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Roll call, Sandy.
Mr. Balderman?
Here.
Mrs. Bassone?
Here.
Mr. Burns?
Here.
Mr. Patani?
Here.
Mr. Hobbiter? Mr. Ingolia? He was here a short time ago. Did he leave the meeting?
He just exited the meeting.
Yes. Mr. Lenhart?
Here.
Mr. Lofredo?
Here.
Mr. Pellegrino? Mrs. Pollock? Mr.
Here.
Mr. Serino?
Here.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
Okay. Mission statement. Manasquan School District empowers all students by providing a safe, healthy, and inclusive environment where continual growth, perseverance, and rigorous academic standards are balanced with extracurricular opportunities and rich traditions through partnership with the community. Statement to the public. Oftentimes, it may appear to members of the audience that the Board of Education takes action with very little comment and in many cases by unanimous vote. Before a matter is placed on the agenda at a public meeting, the administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter.
Dennis Ingolia is back.
Okay.
He is now joining.
The administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter with the superintendent of schools. If the superintendent of schools is satisfied that the matter is ready to be presented to the Board of Education, it is then placed on the agenda of the next combined Committee of the Whole and regular board meeting. The members of the board work with the administration and the superintendent of schools to assure that they fully understand the matter. After discussing during the Committee of the Whole portion of the meeting, the matter is focused on during a regular public board meeting agenda and presented to the Board of Education for a vote. Acceptance of minutes. Recommend acceptance and approval of the minutes of the combined Committee of the Whole and regular public meeting and closed executive session of May 12, 2020. Executive session minutes will be withheld from disclosure until such time as the reason for discussing and acting on a matter in closed executive session no longer exists. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes?
Make a motion.
Mr. Lenhart, second?
Yeah.
Mr. Burns?
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bassone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Ingolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Serino?
Yes. Yes.
Carrie.
So there is no student board representative report for this month, so we'll move on to our presentations, and I will turn it over to Dr. Cajun.
Thank you very much. Also, I informed both principals tonight that we would need their presentations, but they will be reporting at the next meeting that we have about and how things have opened. So I let both Colleen and Rob know that we weren't doing anything with their reports tonight. In regards to the return to school roadmap, My administrative team, as you know from the last time we presented this about 2 months ago, I guess we presented this in April, March?
Yes, April, I believe, was when we started.
To let the board know exactly how we were going about viewing the mandates that were coming down from the governor's office and developing a vision of how we would enact facilitate virtual learning and then move forward as the other mandates came down. So the date when we were going to conclude our return to school roadmap, can you hear me? There it is, was tonight, June 16th. So what I'm going to present this evening is a culmination of all those committees from the administrative team that met, and they each had, as I said when I presented this, a theme that they had to focus on for exactly how we were going to organize closing, ending the school year, and then opening up again in September. With that, I'd like to start with facilities and security. Now, the person who was in charge of the facilities committee was Dr. Crawley. So I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Crawley to go over exactly how he came up with in his committee, and they already presented this to not the whole administrative team, but to Jesse. Jesse reviewed these things before we were presenting this evening. So, Pete?
Sure. The Facilities and Security Committee, first of all, consisted of myself as chair and included Matt Hudson, Mark Roger, and Tim Clayton. So we've been meeting weekly to go over what we need to do to get ready for the reopening of the school year in September, and actually now more pressingly the reopening of the extended school year program come July 6th. As you can see on the slide that's being shared with you, one of the primary concerns with opening schools in September is supply chain issues and everyone rushing to purchase PPE, cleaning supplies, things like that come late August. We have issues with supply chain on regular school year, so given the circumstances, this was paramount to our success. So we have already ordered 6 months of disinfection and cleaning supplies. That should last us through December. We'll continue to re-up that supply as the school year nears and as it begins, so that we try to maintain a six-month window of supplies on hand, so that we never have any issues with shortages or any reason to not have a perfectly clean school once our kids get in. Other more unique supplies that are being purchased, either have been purchased or have purchase orders in, are included on this slide. They include PPE, masks and face shields for our students and staff, non-contact thermometers. One of the requirements to enter the building, at least during the extended school year, which I'll review a little later, is going to be having your temperature taken. So having non-contact thermometers is essential for that, obviously. We've improved our air filtration in both of the buildings to hospital grade MERV 10 filters. Those do a better job of removing, you know, micro particulate like viruses in the air. We're also purchasing and installing in the nurse's office in particular, since that's where obviously sick and infected people who are infectious might congregate. Air scrubbers, they turn over all the air in about 1,000 square foot space in a matter of minutes. So run it through a HEPA filter. So that's been we've been advised from our professional groups that that's a good investment to keep our kids and our nurses safe. We also, on the less technical side of things, but maybe even more effective, are purchasing visual aids. I'm sure you've seen them in stores, stickers that go on the floor that keep students and staff 6 feet apart, arrows to dictate or indicate which way students should be walking in hallways to make sure that 6 foot distance is maintained. You can go next, Jess. The second portion of our Do First mission based on the roadmap was to provide guidance for cleaning and disinfection. At this point, all of our custodial staff and anyone responsible for disinfection has sat through and been certified in the maintenance and cleaning protocol in a COVID-19 setting. That took place at this point several weeks ago. So for the last several weeks, we've been cleaning with those protocol in place. Both buildings, as you would imagine, have undergone a deep cleaning. That happened as soon as we left and has been being kept up on as the building is occupied by different staff and students who are picking up and dropping off computers and things like that. We are also stressing to anyone who's in the building, whether or not be employees or visitors, that social distance and other mitigation measures like masks are being worn. We continue to, and Matt Hudson in particular continues to monitor the infection, the most up-to-date infection control guidelines that the CDC has issued, and those are regularly communicated to our custodians during staff meetings to make sure we're doing what's best practice at the time. Before schools, that was all under the Do First umbrella of our committee. It kind of moves in three phases. The second phase is due before schools open. So this is kind of where we're focused right now. We've gone through and measured every room in the district to make sure or to confirm how many seats we can put in a socially distant manner. Most of the regular size classrooms can easily fit 15 students. And if we get creative with layout, as high as 18. We've also measured some of the larger buildings just to start to get a feel for if 6 feet of distance is required, how many students we can get into the place. Under best case scenario. The other thing we've done is we've had a lot of success with these electrostatic sprayers, which spray a positively charged ion with viricide in it. We're going to equip every one of our custodians who are on duty at any time with one of those, and those are being deployed regularly already and will continue to be deployed at an even higher rate as the buildings become more and more occupied. And we continue to discuss and stay up to date on CDC guidance regarding cleaning and how that relates to the start of school. And finally, once school is open and a plan's in place and kids are actually in, we will obviously continue to stay updated on any guidance issued by the federal or state or local level governments in terms of best practices for cleaning and disinfection and student movement throughout the buildings.
Thank you, Pete.
Yep.
We're now going to move to technology. Mr. Place, if you want to handle this. Or right back to the
room. Sure.
Oh, here we go.
Thank you. So in terms of technology, most of this centers around devices. You know, at the time of the closing, we obviously had to go very quickly into, a remote learning situation. Fortunately, you know, we were lucky that grades 6 through 12 already had devices, you know, but at the end of the day, there were still about 1,200 devices out there, you know, in students' hands that we're now dealing with bringing back into district and then making a plan for giving them out again for when school opens in September. So as you can see on the screen, what's in progress right now, and those of you who are parents probably experienced the process of scheduling an appointment online. For technology, you know, we're doing those no-touch returns where students or parents come up to us, read us the asset number from the device, place it on a cart. We're asking students to keep their bags till next year I think someone else started screen sharing.
That may have been me, Jesse.
No, that's okay.
I was looking around too much.
There we go. Your screen was more interesting than my PowerPoint, so that's fine. In terms of collecting student devices, that's happening right now. It's going pretty well from the few days that we've had. Staff devices, you know, because we're trying to avoid having staff coming back to district, we're not having them return them for this summer. And in terms of maintenance that we do on the devices this summer, as students bring them in now, we're basically quarantining the devices for a week. Even though the most recent guidance seems to suggest that surface transmission is not as big of a deal as initially thought, you know, we're just playing it safe and quarantining them for a minimum of 5 days before anyone touches them. And then in terms of summer staffing, you know, in technology, we both have our full-time staff that works here all year round, and we usually do hire some part-time staff in the summer to assist us. So with those, the concerns have been around those staffing practices, and I'll touch on that a little bit more during my report a little bit later. In terms of what's going to happen at the end of the summer as we go into the school year, at least at this point, we plan on doing a more formalized version of what we have done in the past, where, you know, in the past we kind of say, these are the days that you can come pick up your device, you know, come whenever you want. Just to minimize those crowds, we're probably going to do something similar with the online scheduling of appointments. So essentially what we are doing right now, just in reverse, to give out the devices. You know, these are more ancillary items about the remote learning and how we've dealt with it. We are using our existing management asset tracking and management systems. We're going to do a normal reconciliation of assets this summer.
We're looking into some options for remote support capabilities to better enhance that. So should we have to go into a remote learning situation next year, we'll be a little more prepared for that. And also, as you know, we're planning an expansion of our one-to-one program down to grade five. Those devices for grade five have been ordered. Supply chain and availability is an issue we're hearing about in the tech world today, but at least as of today, we're expecting an early August delivery, so we should be okay. So, thank you.
Thanks, Jess. I'm going to move to instruction now. Instruction, the committee itself was chaired by Mr. Coppola, Mrs. Graziano, Ms. Kenny, Mrs. Pollack, and Mr. Goodall were as well on that committee. I believe we also had some assistant principals on that committee as well. It was very broad in scope in regards to what the instructional committee was charged with doing. They needed to aggregate data to see exactly what we did well, what we didn't do well. We're in our virtual world. Focus on a very simple question: how can we do what we do better as we move into September? And what lessons did we learn from aggregating the data and looking at exactly how we presented the information to the children during this virtual learning situation? I asked them to earmark certain ways of instructing that we felt were more efficient than others, and they did that. And then develop a plan to bring all of our teachers up to a certain level in regards to meeting what they feel is the best way of virtual learning. And they earmarked three different ways of doing this, and we're going to have professional develop through committees to teach the teachers exactly what we expect from them in the virtual world. This committee established a clear model for the expectation for virtual learning, which I think was very important to do as we move to September. And we're going to utilize the month of August and September with our staff to focus on exactly what we need from them virtually if we have to go there again. You can go to the next slide, Jess. As you can see, a return to instruction working group was developed composed of the people who are on the screen. And this is like a diverse group of employees who are here. As you can see, we have instructors from both the elementary school and the high school, as well as guidance counselors, as well as administrators. And they are working as we speak to see exactly how we're going to move forward. Next slide, Jess. This particular committee focused on two goals, and these goals will be accomplished by the end of the summer. As you can see, goal one focused on aggregating data and collecting data, and goal two, proactively communicating with all instructional staff how to assess the specific needs that our students have and to focus on that plan of operations that we will develop and bring the learning to the children successfully. Next slide, Jess. The plan for assessing students' learning progress in the elementary school and the high school differed, as you can see on the screen. And this makes a lot of sense because the tools we use on both sides of the street are different. And I don't need to read this to you. You can see what their focus was, there being the committee that looked at this with tonight's presentation. And we do want to provide a comprehensive summer program to bridge the gaps that we have found in the last 2 months of August. And we will be doing that physically here at school. We've now been allowed to have a physical extended year program, which Pete will focus on in a second. Having done that, that gives us the opportunity to open up the elementary school to have classes, 15 students in a class for the teachers to focus on the gaps that we found from the data that we aggregated in the other section I spoke about. Next slide, Jess. An inventory is very important in regards to focusing on all the programs that we have in district that we utilize using the computer. And this committee did that and will report back to the administrative team on if they feel there's any other things that are necessary in regards to this particular inventory. Jess, next. They were very cognizant of the need to connect with the New Jersey Department of Education and the mandates that are going out there. And they focused also on grading practices, because in the new virtual reality of instruction, the traditional methodologies that we utilize for assessing students changed. And in case we have to go back into that virtual world again in September, they're looking at exactly what was the best way of doing that. Next. Intentional curriculum was something that was very important. And the intentional curriculum were things that we were directly aligned to the core content standards. So core content standards were realized, and the curriculum that we were utilizing virtually was tweaked in certain ways, modified, so as to be better received. We felt that we couldn't cover everything online, but yet there were other things that we could go in depth with. So this particular committee focused on what we call an intentional curriculum, something based on our core content standards, something that we felt our students really needed and other parts were taken out. Next slide.
Sorry, I think that's the end of instruction, Dr. Cajun.
Yeah, it is. Now we're going to school operations. And there is school operations. There is facilities. There is school operations. Colin Graciano and Rob Goodall was the chair of the school operations, and they were charged with exactly how we were going to plan to close the end of the year, which I think they did very well, as I think everything's going smoothly as the end of the year. And if you feel it's not, you can tell me tonight. With the certification awards that we had for the class of 2020, the scholarship awards, the different National Honor Societies on both sides of the street, as well as the awards and ceremonies that we had in the elementary school. I think that we did some very nice virtual presentations for the children that were very effective. Regarding school operations on the next slide, Jess. Online sports registration was something focused on and something that we have in place. Preliminary planning for live graduation ceremonies in July. As you know, July 13th, we will have the high school rain day, July 14th. The elementary school is July 15th, rain day, July 16th. They have been planned by both Mrs. Graciano and Mr. Goodall. Students will show up 1 hour before the ceremony. There'll be no practices, and we will talk to them about exactly how we will social distance. I'll be getting out to the community closer to those dates when I get more information from the state about their regulations. I don't want to say something and all of a sudden it's changed by Trenton. I want to ensure that what we say is what we're going to follow. Next slide. They focused on needs and concerns reopening, as you can see, things like hallway traffic, lunch. Is lunch going to be in the cafeteria, the classroom? Are we going to have an 8-period day, a drop and rotate day? What kind of day is the elementary school going to experience? Are elementary schools going to be, classes going to be self-contained? What about field trips, assemblies? All these things were covered, and we developed answers that we're ready to go out to the community with as soon as we see the mandates that come down from Trenton. And again, we have a lot of questions about exactly what our expectations are going to be by the New Jersey Department of Education. Next slide, we have additional considerations that were discussed and spoken about. Next slide, Jeff. One of the things that I think we might have to face is not only children that are afraid to come to school, but what happens if staff are afraid to come to school when we open up in September? And these are things that we really can't focus on until we know exactly what to take the Department of Education is going to have through the legislature and the Senate with Governor Murphy. Because we do have some staff that are in a category of high risk, and we have to be concerned about that. Next slide focuses on policy considerations. This is something I'm going to bring to the board at the July meeting. We have some policy considerations that we have. We have to take a look at our attendance policy, any health-related protocols, and discuss exactly if you do want to modify our policies or just want to hold them and move with them as we move forward. But policy considerations is something that the board is going to have to consider with the thought of opening up in September. Next. Wellness. Wellness, again, a very important committee. Colleen Graziano, Leslie Kenny, Margaret Pollack, Justin Roach, they were all actively engaged in this, as were others. And questions about the emotional, social, and psychological wellness of our staff and our students. How are we going to gauge that? How are we going to give them programs to focus on any traumatic loss that they had or they received? These were discussions that we have, and we have answers to those questions. Again, and we will implement those answers in coordination with regulations are that come down from the Department of Education. These were very important discussions that we had, and as you can see, they focused on some outside local resources, Traumatic Loss Coalition, New Jersey Mental Health Cares, Performance, Society for the Prevention of Teen Suicide, Common Ground Grief Center. They reached out to these places, and we have some ideas for professional development and handouts and videos. Next slide, Jess. Also, to evaluate staff mental health. How can we do that? What are some questionnaires that we can put together and surveys? And we're actively engaged in doing that, as you can see by the suggestions that the committee is giving me for as we move forward. And last, the health screenings that have to take place. And if we open up in September, there's going to be a need for some health screenings. There's going to be a need for some temperature checks. There's going to be a need for parents to realize if a child has a fever, he doesn't come to school. If a child's coughing, they don't come to school. So these are all concerns that we are talking about. And when the decision is finally made about September, we will be ready to put a plan in place. Are there any questions from the board regarding the return to school roadmap that I can help you with?
I have a question. This is Alexis Pollack.
Sure. Hi, Alexis.
Hi. With respect to the summer program, the skills program, would that be accessible to all students?
Yes, my goal is to open that up to not only all students in Manasquan, any eighth grader who's coming here from the sending districts as well. We're talking about, Alexis, the summer enrichment program in the last 2 weeks in August, correct?
I am, and so would that be, would there be a fee for that, or would it be provided by the district?
No
regardless
fee.
Regardless of...
There'll be no fee. I think that and if the board feels I'm wrong, now's your opportunity to tell me. I think that we can provide this. Pete and I have discussed this. We do have some CARES Act money that we can use for this. And I think because the communities, all six and Manasquan, have gone through such a traumatic experience, I don't think there's a need to charge. We can afford this. Okay? Gina, you good with that?
Thank you.
Yeah, so Frank, you're saying the reaching out to the sending districts, that would be for the high school?
Yeah, for eighth grade. Eighth grade is going tonight.
Right.
That will attend Manasquan High School. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, we'll do this the last 2 weeks of August. Rick Coppola, our Director of Curriculum Instruction, will present to the board exactly what that plan is, and I know Colleen's at the meeting tonight, so I'm going to ask her to join in as well, because of the data from the IXL that we aggregated from the elementary school showed us some of the needs that we have for our children. And I'm going to say to Pete, my expectation is to have 15 students in a classroom per teacher. And we're going to have social distancing, we're going to have temperatures checked, we're going to have masks. And when we go over exactly what the committee today discussed about how we're going to do the extended year program, we're going to mirror those things with the enrichment program. I have to ensure that children here are going to be safe and secure, and we'll do everything we can, including, as you'll see, disinfecting the building several times a day. Okay? That ends the presentation for this evening. Now, if you want to go to 11, public forum. Gene?
Sure. Yep. So public forum and agenda items. Time may be allotted for public comment. At this meeting, each speaker may be allotted a limited time when recognized by the presiding officer. In the event it appears that the public comment portion of the meeting may exceed 45 minutes, the presiding officer may limit each statement made by a participant to 3 to 5 minutes duration. Individuals wishing to address the board shall be recognized by the presiding officer and shall give their names, addresses, and group, if any, that they represent. Although the board encourages public participation, it reserves the right through the presiding officer to terminate remarks to and or by any individual not keeping with the conduct of a proper and efficient meeting. During the public participation portion of the meeting, the board will not respond to questions from the public involving employment, appointment, termination of employment, negotiations, terms and conditions of employment, evaluation of the performance of, promotion, or disciplining of any specific or prospective or current employee. This public forum is limited to comment on items included in this agenda only. Pete, do we have anyone?
We do not.
Okay. So then we'll move to our second public forum. Open to any questions on this agenda or not on the agenda. Anyone, Pete?
We do not.
Okay. So now I'll hand it back over to Dr. Cajun.
All right, now we're going into the committee of a whole. And in regards to the committee of a whole tonight, we have education, curriculum, and technology agenda items. And the first one on the list, and the only one on your list, is New Jersey CUSAC District Performance Review. And we received a letter from CUSAC, which states in March 2019, the department issued an evaluation of Manasquan School District pursuant to the requirements of NJAC 6830, the New Jersey Quality Single Accountability Continuum. At that time, the district was placed on a continuum in each of the performance evaluation areas in the district performance review, instruction and program, fiscal management, government, operations, and personnel. Following the initial evaluation, the district developed an improvement plan to address non-compliant areas in instruction and program. The plan was approved on September 26, 2019. And the board remembers that. It was all regarding the PowerPoint presentation when I did not discuss the subgroups, even though you did see the subgroups. So I thought that was sort of unfair, but we went through it anyway, and we went through it successfully. And I want to thank Rick Coppola, Colin Graziano, Justin Roach, Margaret Pollock, Leslie Kenny, for all the hard work they did. And to cut to the chase, as you can see by what you have, Manasquan is now a high-performing school district because we've passed all the categories. Instruction and program is up to an 86. Fiscal management, 100. Governance, 92. Operations, 100. Personnel, 86. So we've now been placed on a high-performing level for school districts in the state of New Jersey with this letter from Paula Bloom, Acting Director, Office of Field Services Coordination, Division of Field Services. So it's a good thing. No, there's no policy agenda items. Finance, we have a couple things. You want to show the plaque first?
Sure.
We're talking about what we've accomplished.
Yep, we've got a few things to talk about, first of which would be our nomination for one of 2020's best public high schools in America, which we have a plaque to commemorate based on the niche.com rankings. Niche ranks high schools, public and private schools. This is specifically for public schools, but based on state test scores, college readiness, graduation rates, and SAT, ACT scores. And our high school was fortunate to come in at number 602 of over 25,000 schools that were ranked with this methodology. So a nice honor for the high school and showing that they're doing a great job.
But that's for the whole district, no?
This is for the high school. The district plaque is in there, but we also received one for the whole district, which used similar methodology, the combination of the two schools.
So 602 out of 25,000?
Over 25,000, yeah.
That's pretty good. Job well done, and compliment to the staff.
So that's one fun item. Another item, we did break ground on the construction in the gym. Demolition has almost concluded at this point of the floor and the bleachers. Everything's out. One of the interesting or cool outcomes of the demolition was that the floor was coming up. We had designed for some of the floor to be brought up in pieces, namely the center court and some of the lettering on the sides, big blue, to be mounted somewhere in the building, whether it be the gym or somewhere else, to kind of memorialize the gym floor as it was. But as it came up, and I'll get up to show this to you a little closer, we were able to take out a number of 1 by 1 foot pieces of floor, and we turned them over to Ryan Graff in the wood shop to turn into plaques that we hope to give to some of our dignitaries and, you know, historically excellent athletes. So that, I think that came out pretty well, and a pretty cool memento for them to have.
Board will get.
We intend to give them board members, certain teams. I'm not sure which teams, but some teams that have been successful and individual athletes who have been successful in the past representing the school.
When we do the ribbon cutting ceremony, we'll invite teams back and 1,000-point scorers and so on and so forth, and it'll be nice. We'll have that for everyone. Who we invite?
Yeah, it was a fortunate kind of outcome of the demo that we were able to salvage a lot of this wood, so it's going to make some nice mementos. That demo, like I mentioned, is nearing its completion. Everything's on schedule. We just had a construction meeting today. The floor is expected to be fully installed and ready to be used on in the beginning of August. August 7th is the date they gave, but within the first week or two of August is what we would expect. The bleachers are going to take a little longer for fabrication. We expect those to be fully installed and the gym fully up and running after the week after teachers' convention, which is the first week of November. In the interim, while the bleachers are out, the gym floor will be usable and will be used by our gym classes and for practice and things like that. Once the bleachers go in, we'll have to vacate it so the bleachers can go up. That's a 2-week process, and then that project will be over. So that's where we're at with the gymnasium project. Just a quick update on the HVAC project. Rob Notley couldn't attend because he is on vacation, but just to fill you in, they're continuing to demo throughout the building. If you've driven by, you've seen that all rooftop and air handling units energy recovery units are now laid down in the softball field behind the high school. They were on campus today hammering out pretty much the final major RFI in getting those rooftop units up, which is steel engineering. So everyone is satisfied with the plan to move forward with that, and those units should be up on the roof shortly. So that's where we're at with the HVAC project. With regards to finance, any questions on either of those projects?
We're on time and on the budget. That's the important thing.
With regards to finance, I did just want to draw your attention to one of the, this happens annually, but it's a kind of unique set of resolutions, number 41 to 43 on the sending district agenda, which set not to exceed deposits into our reserve accounts. Once we are audited and we know what our surplus looks like, this just gives us leeway to deposit that excess surplus into reserve accounts to be used for specific purposes at a later date. So those are those three unique agenda items in finance. Just wanted to draw your attention to that and see if there were any questions in that regard. I will turn this over for some discussion, but we have discussed in some of our president and vice president meetings opening up the turf field for use now that non-contact sports are permitted. The NGSIAA has not allowed for organized practices, so we're thinking more of an open field type situation where we'll staff it with a security guard for 3 hours a day to allow for students to go down and practice and use the field that we have. We initially were talking about 8 to 11 a.m. daily. Those can be weekdays, weekends, but we wanted to turn it over to you guys to see what you guys think would be the best use of that field.
I figured, Gene, 7 days a week. What was the time again?
We said 8 to 11. It's going to get hot, so that's a cooler kind of time frame for the kids. We can keep it safe temperatures. And
yeah, if it's 8 to 11, and I think everybody in town will know it's 8 to 11, and I'm talking not about teams, I'm talking about anybody from the community, our community, Manasquan, that wanted to utilize the field. I'm talking about not somebody signing the field out, just parents taking their children on the field, wanting to play. or if students want to use the field to work out. What do you think?
So I'd like to open it more, but I guess we're still under the opinion that we need supervision at that field when we open it, security. Well,
that's definitely the call of the board. If you're asking me, we have a group of neighbors that are around, and I think that if we have security, then I definitely know what's happening instead of hearing their perception of what's happening. And
so we have, I could definitely see, you know, 8 to 11 being eaten up real quick with our teams, captain's practices and all. Maybe we go back and make another phone call to Creation or the borough. I mean, would we be comfortable putting their security on the field if we just open it up for the general public?
If the township security would be interested in manning the field, you're asking?
Yeah, if recreation, I mean, if we're going to open it up and let the town use it and all, you know, maybe recreation would be willing to, you know, either provide some security down there or kick in to help us out. I'm just trying to think of ways we can open it up for more hours.
Well, the one way we could do it would be turn it over to recreation, ask recreation if they'd be willing to facilitate opening the field for us, and having him do a building use form for the field, and just say, okay, have Pip Ertl and the people he has at work for him secure the field. Our security would not be involved, and it would still be open to the community. We could do that.
Yeah, I think if REC is going to use the field, they should be responsible for security. I mean, they're going to have counselors there anyway. They'll have supervision there anyway. So I think we need to give them a list of things that, maybe even a checklist that they need to do before they lock it up. Make sure the field is clean. Make sure here are all the rules and regulations before you leave. You have to have A, B, C, D, E, F, G done.
If the board is fine with that, I'm fine with it. It's the board decision.
Aren't you talking about three different kinds of uses, though? You're talking about people coming by and passively using it. You're talking about recreation organizing and having somebody there and locking up. Yeah. And you're talking about captain's practice. There are three distinct differences.
Correct.
So to clarify the recreation piece, them manning open field, just to Tom's point, is something we can talk about. Their use of the field is open and available to them to sign up on with our facilities software. So if they want to, they can right now go in and sign up for a team or a organized rec event that would assume the responsibility of supervising that event. So that is open right now.
Yeah, and going back to what Tom said, my intent was not just opening it up for rec, but opening it up for the general public to use. And then how do we provide security or supervision during those times?
Since you have three users.
And that's what I said. Maybe
my first concern would be our teams. Is there a notification system for our coaches? Some of them aren't in district. Mm-hmm. Do they know that the field is now accessible to them? For them to have workouts for their teams? Because with everything being uncertain, the teams that are prepared to go in the fall are going to be more successful. So, I mean, I think it should be our kids first.
Okay, but we already did
then that. Then recreation, then the general public.
Okay, but without a doubt, I think that 8 to 11 was through a survey.
Not enough.
I think that was a survey from the coaches.
Right.
Because of the heat. I get that. We didn't, because the original time was stick them out there in the afternoon, it was too hot. That part I get. But we're also coming, when we made that decision, we didn't have all this. Now you have to reassess how much time they're in that field. And then you have to also remember that, you know, we built $1.5 million field, and now we're gonna argue about whether or not we can use it 3 or 4 hours a day. It should be open 8 hours a day.
Okay. We already went to the athletic coordinator before we even had this discussion. We said to him, come back to us. Now we know what the regulations are with the state of New Jersey. Talk to your coaches. Tell us when you want the field, because you have first priority. He came back to us and he said 7:30 to 11:30. We said, fine. Now, they already have the field from 7:30 to 11:30. We're talking about opening up the field before the window opens up for the teams, and then when the window opens up for practices, the teams are going to have first shot at that, and then we will open it up for the community as well. But right now, starting Monday, we were going to open it up from 8 to 11 for the community, and then I think it was June 22nd was the date we got from the state, when then teams would be able to practice, for, or at least captains practices, and they were going to then have it from... Yeah, go ahead. I see Gabrielle, our attorney, says, Frank, be quiet because you said something illegal.
No, just you for high school activities, the executive order 149 says it can't start before June 30th. So I just want to make sure for the athletics, executive order 149 says it can't start sooner than June 30th. So it has to be July 1st or after. Just wanted to...
Is that with coaches or without coaches?
It's high school sporting activities, so I'm assuming that's with the coaches, with, you know, team practices or anything like that.
And I thought
I just think we're gonna make it more confusing to the general public if you open it up for a couple weeks to the general public and then block out 7:30 to 11:30 for the teams. Why don't you just block it out now? Nothing before noon unless it's a team, and from noon to four for the general public. And if Rec wants to block out, you know, some days, they're not going to, Rec's not going to do anything probably during the week, right? Because they already have their program. They're not going to interfere with their own program. And they're not going to have volunteer adults to supervise it. So, I mean, why don't we make it simple and use round hours and block it out now going forward?
So, when I brought up Rec, and maybe I should have said, Rec can use it when they want. They can apply, put the application in like anyone else, play rec soccer, whatever they're going to do, that's fine. But maybe I should have said the town. I'm just trying to figure out if we do open it up longer, and because even though if we have captain's practices 8 to noon, kids are still going to want to be on there afterwards. Right? Yes. So how do we get the supervision on the field afterwards? So, you know.
Didn't we say
that? Like, maybe we go back to the town. Maybe they'll help us out, or, you know, or something like that, and help us get security on the field.
But have the security officers that we have on staff, have they been working on since March 16th?
Yeah, they most certainly have. They work every day. They deliver food to families, and they're also here with the drop off of materials, and they've been working.
So we didn't save any money on security during since March 16th.
We didn't save any money on any salary contract.
No, and Gabrielle could probably earmark exactly what executive order that was that said that everybody had to get paid. Oh, okay. So getting back to the field. We will open it up either in the early afternoon or the early evening. I think 12 to 4 might be tough with the heat, and especially with the beaches, but we'll open it up. We're going to have to calculate how much it's going to cost us, because it's still a cost for the security to be out there after hours, if they're out there from 3 to 5, if their day ends at 3 o'clock.
And again, why did we determine that we have to have security?
My thought, and I'll throw this out for discussion, is that a couple times I've gone by there and seen it opened up, I've seen bicycles on it, dogs on it, things like that. And I'm not comfortable just opening it up and leaving it open right now. Maybe I'm wrong, and after having it open a few weeks, we find there are no problems. But I hate to have animals and...
But why can't we just enforce the policies that we already have? We already have policies that say no animals on school property.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a genius to figure out that they shouldn't ride their bikes on the field. Why can't we just enforce
it? But
they do. They have.
Yeah.
I've actually seen grown-ups walking dogs on the field.
Because no one tells them not to.
Correct. So that's
why we want security there.
Yeah. So that comes back to my point is,
What is security going to tell them not to, was my question.
We
have security all over the football games, and five people bring their dogs to every football game. So what my thing is, if we're going to pay people, then to do the simplest thing, like tell people not to bring a dog on the field, it makes no sense.
Well,
that's why we're not opening the $1 million investment that we have, because we're worried about dogs. Doesn't make sense.
Dogs and bikes and things like that.
Gene?
Yeah.
Hi, Donna. You are correct. Today, there's kids riding their bikes on it. I had to go to the fence and tell them to stop riding their bike on the field. And there's dogs in there. I don't know how people are getting in, but that field is used every single day, every single solitary day. Just so you know, there's kids and bikes and dogs and all kinds of things going on in there every day. When I leave for work, when I come home from work, there's somebody in there.
Mm-hmm. That's all, Tom. I want to use $1 million field as much as we can, but I want to protect $1 million field.
It's just ironic to me that people, bikes, and dogs are on it all the time, but the only time the police get involved is when our kids are out there playing on it. It doesn't make sense.
All right, so Pete and I will work on times when we can open the field, and we'll be in touch with the athletic coordinator to make sure that all the teams have sufficient time, and then we'll report back to the board on exactly what we came up with.
It's the same thing we had. You know, we always had a priority. Teams get it for as much time as they want.
Mm-hmm. And also, we'll start with security, and then we can wean security off it as we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys not have locks on those the gates, or is the fence just not high enough?
Well, that's pretty high.
I want to avoid students from try to stop them from climbing over the fence. They come down the path that we've now opened up because we do have a gate on it. And I watched students park in the admin parking lot and walk down the gravel road to go out and play. And I'm not talking about more than three or five. They go out there to work out, which I think is fine. And I've talked to them, and I said, just make sure that they have enough water and that they're fine. And they don't exceed the 50 limit that we have by the governor. But they do walk on that road behind the football stands. That's how they get on it. They're not climbing the fence anymore. At least I haven't heard they're climbing the fence anymore. I haven't gotten any pictures from people saying they're climbing the fence anymore, which I was getting constantly from neighbors. So.
If we're going to open it up later in the day, and before we go the higher security route, can we talk to Mr. Ertl at the recreation and see if they would like to have their volunteers, do things on the field from 4 to 8 and let them have an adult there?
Before
we go the security route.
The answer to that question is definitely yes, but I want you to know that we already had that conversation with them, and they told me they weren't interested in that, but we will circle back to them. So we'll talk to him again.
Okay.
Any other field questions? Seeing none, you now want to present on our extended year program?
Yeah, Jesse, you mind putting that couple slides up?
And as Pete, right before he does present, I want the board to realize that I'm going to say 95%. I think it's 98%, but 95% of the districts in the county are doing virtual extended year programs. The state just came out on Friday saying that we could do a physical extended year program. I think it's a good test for us in regards to seeing how we can organize the 35 children, and it's better for the students instead of virtual learning. Especially in the modifications in the curriculum that are necessary for the extended year program to be successful. Students in that category have social, emotional, as well as academic needs. They need to be here with a teacher in order for it to be more effective. So when we met today as a committee, we set up parameters to make sure that the extended year program in the physical sense, on campus, would be safe and secure. And Pete's going to review it now. Understand it was my decision to make it physical, make it here every day.
So just for some background, if you were unaware, on Friday, Governor Murphy did make the announcement that we could hold instructional indoor summer teaching, summer school type activities. What I am going to be presenting on is extended school year, which is not what Alexis asked about earlier, which is the August enrichment we have planned. So this extended school year is starting July 6th and is a service offered to our special education students to, you know, try to keep them on the right path and meet their needs. So this is, it was challenging, obviously, to put this together so quickly. I have a couple bullets on this. In your handouts, you'll see a more comprehensive plan that we put together at our meeting this morning on the topic, as well as what the state provided for in terms of the guidelines and the parameters that had to be met, which are identical to those that have to be met for summer camps. So they have an 11-page document that is the basis of what this plan and how this plan was developed. And we believe after meeting this morning that we can meet all those standards, keep our students safe, and have in-person instruction take place. So that's where we're at. This is a few bullets from that, but this basically sums it up. We have about 65 students in the program. One of the guidelines stated that there should be minimal movement between classrooms and between students, so we're trying to isolate them, for lack of a better word, in one wing of the elementary school. The 100 wing was most conducive to that, just based on the needs of the students and where things currently are. That's where we are looking at. Students will enter that wing of the high school using three different doors that are already in that elementary school, in that wing. They'll go right to their classrooms, where movement between classes will be limited. Temperatures will be taken, and screening questions will be asked, as is required based on the guidelines, at the door for everyone entering, including staff, students, security, anyone entering the building in that area for that purpose. Desks in each classroom will be 6 feet apart, like I described earlier. We've already measured out the classrooms and ensured that the amount of students we need to accommodate can be met with 6 foot spacing in the classrooms. Anytime a student is moving around the building, and I say that, you know, with some, we expect limited movement, but if they are moving around the building, or if they, you know, there's some necessary movement when they come through the door and enter their classroom, when they leave their classroom for the day, if they have to go to the restroom. So at any point that's taking place, they have to be wearing a mask, because we cannot guarantee social distancing and 6 feet can be maintained. When they're at their desk, that can be relaxed because we have measured 6 feet and we can ensure as long as they're sitting at that desk, they are 6 feet from any of their peers or their teacher. Masks and shields will be worn at staff by all times. They're a little unique from the students in that they're moving about the classroom, they're talking more, so we think it best that they wear a face covering at all times to keep themselves and their students safe. Next page, Jess. One of the things we spoke about at the meeting today was preparing staff and nurses for this. So the nurses have requested already and are excited to train the staff on COVID-19 awareness and teaching in a COVID-19, potential COVID-19 setting. Every staff member that's involved in the program will be trained by our nurses in how to take a temperature, in how to interact with students with mitigation measures in effect so that we can ensure safety of both them and the kids. Students as well will obviously need to be trained, and part of the curriculum will be training on hand washing and COVID-19 related hygiene. While that may sound young, we are dealing with pre-K students, so you know there will be a focus on expectations for them to keep their hands clean and keep their peers safe as well. We do have to again by guideline require an isolation area to be in place or established for students who begin to show symptoms. We're meeting that requirement by having student, you know, the best isolation area is basically outside. So as long as the weather is not inclement, we can just walk the student outside and obviously notify their parent or whoever has to come pick them up if the need arises or the weather is inclement, those students will isolate in the nurse's office. All classrooms, and this was very important, and we discussed it a lot, all classrooms will be disinfected before, during, and after school lets out. One thing that we're fortunate with this extended school year program, is some of those items that the operations committee brought up as concerns about opening school are not challenges we face. We don't have phys ed, we don't have lunch, we don't have some of those big congregational type activities like the like lunch and phys ed presents. So cleaning is a little bit easier in terms of what, you know, more accomplishable in terms of the size of the building and the movement of the kids. So we're gonna disinfect each room in the morning before the kids show up. While the kids are in the room, we're going to move them periodically during the day out of the room, socially distant, 6 feet apart, and enter the room. Our custodial staff will enter the room and disinfect it. Then the kids will reoccupy the room. And then when they leave for the day, we'll disinfect the room. The bathroom will also obviously be disinfected periodically throughout the time they're there. I mentioned this earlier in my discussion of facilities, but all the air filters will be replaced with MRF 10, which are hospital-grade air filters, prior to the start of the program. And the HVAC will run at all times the building's occupied, and that HVAC system in the elementary school includes a fresh air return, so fresh air will be coming into the building and the classrooms at all times that kids are in there. Like I said, that is a cursory look at the plan. The comprehensive plan is available to you in your handouts. We met with Colleen, Margaret, Frank, Jesse, Tim Clayton, Mark Roger, and Matt Hudson all met this morning for quite some time to hammer this out. We had to get it done quickly, obviously, since we want to be up and running July 6th, but we are confident our kids will be safe and they'll be their needs will be better met in person.
There's several reasons why I want to do this in person. And we have to also get the feeling of safety and security from the parents as well. So I'm going to offer the parents an opportunity to meet with me before the program starts, and Margaret Pollock's reaching out to all the parents who are engaged and seeing if they want to have a meeting with the superintendent to talk about what we're doing to keep the building safe and secure from the virus. And this is 65 students in a program in a building. It's a microcosm of what's going to happen in September. I want to be in school in September. So this is a good opportunity for us to start slowly in small steps and see if we can successfully start school. So that's why I think it's very important that we have this program. Pete?
Yeah, are there any questions about that or any protocol we have in place? Like I said, we talked about it pretty in depth. We went through page by page the guidance that was given to us by the state. And like I said, we're pretty confident our students and our staff will be safe given what we've put in place.
Okay, G?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Can move on to the superintendent report?
Yes. Total enrollment as we speak, 1,487, 953 in the high school, 534 in the elementary school. We currently are losing 208 seniors in the high school and replacing them with 278 potential students from the elementary school. It is very possible that we could open up the school year in September with 1,000 students in the high school. But again, as we move closer to that, I'll be able to focus on the exact number between that larger class from the elementary school and all of our transfer students that we have from the other high schools. It's taken our population and we've grown a little bit. How much we've grown? I've gotten numbers from Leslie Kenny, and we're just questioning those, and we're going to make sure we have a definite count for August. But I think our population is moving in the right direction. Fire drill reports, we don't have any. There are no HIBs for the month. Report from the assistant superintendent. Jesse, do you have anything?
Just briefly, you know, I touched on most of the technology stuff during the reopening plan. But just in terms of district staffing, I just wanted to update the board on kind of where we are with how we have people at work right now. You know, despite the governor's stay-at-home order being lifted last week or the week before, we put out a staffing memo on June 8th to kind of update all our staff about what our expectations are in terms of who's working, who's at home, who's working from home, and who's here in the buildings. So essentially, even though that stay-at-home order was lifted, the direction from the Department of Education to us at this point is that any employee who can work at home should still be working from home. So the only true essential employees that currently we have here every day on a regular schedule are our custodial staff and our technology staff. And again, that's simply because those groups really can't do most of their functions from home. In terms of administrators, secretaries, and other support staff, we're telling them they should primarily be working from home, but we're allowing them to come work to work as needed, you know, for certain essential functions that they would do here. So, for example, this week, you know, you do see a lot of activity at the school with some of those groups because of the laptop hand-ins and material pickup and things like that. So when staff does come to work, you know, we put out pretty clear guidelines that follow the CDC recommendations. First of all, you know, Pete talked about the cleaning and disinfecting protocols that we have in place. For employees, we kind of divided it up into before they're coming to work, what they should be doing, and then while they're at work, what they should be doing. You know, things for before coming to work, first and foremost, you know, we're emphasizing again, again, and again, any employee who feels under the weather, sick for any reason, should not be coming to work. And in fact, we're also encouraging them, as the governor is, you know, to go get tested if you even have a hint, you know, that you might be, that might be ill. While they're at work, you know, we're pretty much trying to enforce as best we can the guidelines that, you know, you're all familiar with in terms of social distancing, mask wearing, when you can't socially distance and things like that. So that's just where we are in terms of staffing as far as maintaining operations. You know, we've gotten pretty good at a lot of the work from home stuff over the past few months. So we're trying to do that as much as possible while still making sure we maintain all our essential operations.
There we have, thank you, Jess. We have no report from the Director of Curriculum Instruction or the Director of School Counseling tonight. However, before we close the superintendent's report, I just want to report to the board on where we are with our principal search for the 5-8 upper elementary school. And it closes today.
Yes.
Do you have a total number?
It closes at midnight today. I can pull that, unless, Jess, you know that off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, I believe it's 100. We had 114 applications, of which we did 25 preliminary interviews. And from those 25 preliminary interviews, we've narrowed it down to 10 possible candidates that we will meet Thursday and Friday before we turn those, a group of those candidates, narrow that field down to the administrative team that I've put together, chaired by our assistant superintendent. So we're well on our way. The posting closes today. But it was within the confines of the law, Gabrielle, for us to start the interview process during, while it was open, and we did that. So with meet and greets. So our posting was well received. Pete, am I correct?
Yep, I was pulling the number, but I can't get it up this time. But it's, yeah, it's over 100. It was about 120 last time I checked.
Okay. That ends my superintendent's report, Gene. Gene, you're muted again. But if you're muted, I can't hear
you. I got
you.
It. Oh. Recommend approval, acceptance of the superintendent's report. Do we have a motion? Who was that? Second by Fred.
Who was the first? Mr. Patenry, I'm sorry.
It was me, Mark Burns.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Passone? Mrs. Passone?
You're muted, Donna.
I'll go back to her. Mr. Burns?
I'm sorry. Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Angolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes, but I do have one question, and I don't know if this is covered under Document S, under the high school personnel, and maybe I'm a little naive, but what is the Warrior Clubhouse Child Care Coordinator?
The Warrior Clubhouse is our before and after care program, so it's a you know, Manasquan-centric name for the basically daycare that's offered before and after school for working parents.
Is that for students or is that for teachers?
That's for students attend if their parents can't pick them up immediately after school. What you're seeing in there,
oh, okay.
What's being approved is the coordinator of that program.
All right, perfect. I just didn't understand. Thank you.
Yep.
And yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Gary?
Brings us to the Manasquan general items. Does anyone need anything separated out? Items 15 to 23? Does anyone have any questions on items 15 to 23? Do we have a motion for items 15 through 23?
This is Alexis. Motion.
Okay. Second.
Mr. Balderman?
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Passan?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Catana?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Gary?
Brings us to the Manasquan Sending District's general items. Does anyone need anything separated out? Items 24 through 53? Does anyone have any questions, items 24 through 53?
I read the agenda this afternoon. I don't have it in front of me, but is that the change order for the HVAC, the alarm system? Is that in there?
Yes.
Yes.
Can somebody explain why we have a $400,000 change order?
Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead, James.
That wasn't in the original bid. It was just to kind of make some repairs to the old heating system. But the original bid came in so low budget, that we decided the money was there within the referendum. Let's just do it right and repair and replace the entire system.
Okay. Thanks.
It still fits within all the referendum money. Yeah. And we still have money left.
There were some safety concerns with the existing fire alarm system and its integration with the HVAC system that was being installed.
And please understand, we did not just accept the first bid that came our way. We had them put this out to several alarm companies and come back to us three times before we accepted. Boy, actually, you'll accept tonight, before we said we would bring this number to the board. And it was $414,000 with what they put on top of it, their percentage.
Yeah, overhead and profit.
The bid started out, or not the bids, but the cost estimate started out at $550,000, and I said definitely not, and we moved from there. So this wasn't something that was just done lightly. There were several meetings that Pete and I had to have with the facilities people to get us where we are today with this.
Good, Tom?
Good? Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Do we have a motion for items 24 through 53?
Yes, Gene, it's Joe.
Second?
Second. My name's Tom.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Passan?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Manning?
Yes.
Mr. Engolian?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Gary.
Okay. Does anyone have any old business they'd like to discuss? Any new business?
I have some new business, Gene, if I could.
Sure.
I would just want to put this out to the board. I feel that very comfortable with doing our July meeting virtually, but I would like to propose doing our August meeting in person, and I was wondering if anybody had a problem with that.
When is it?
When is the August meeting?
The July one is the 21st. Let me pull the August one.
Can we do the July meeting in person?
I would like to wait with that to see how the state's going, especially with the fluctuation and things.
August 18th.
But understand that's not my decision. If you're proposing that to the group, then it's up to Gene as president and your quorum to decide if you want to come back in July. So Gene, Tom's suggesting me do in person in July.
I'll throw it out to the floor. I'm comfortable being in a group as long as we space. But yeah, I'll leave it up to the other board members. Yeah, get your feedback. I want to make sure everyone's comfortable.
Well, I just want to be clear for the July or August meeting. Are there going to be student presentations or anything? I mean, I know you guys without the presentations don't typically have a huge crowd, but when you do have those presentations, you have a lot of people in. So I just want to make sure we're still abiding by the gathering executive orders that are out there right now.
No, there'll be no student presentations until September. But in August, there will be a presentation to the retiring administrator from the elementary school. So we will have a group of teachers here, but that's sort of confidential, and only the people on the screen have heard that. He doesn't even know yet. So I would like to do that in August, if that's okay, Gabrielle.
You were cutting out a little bit, but as long as the amount of people is going to, satisfy what the governor's put out, and who knows what will change by that point, that's fine.
Okay.
And Gabrielle, just to be safe, we can still allow public comment in the forum we have, for those, if there are members of the public who don't feel safe attending, they can still email me the same way they've been given the opportunity to do.
Is anybody uncomfortable with having a physical meeting in July? Hearing no, Gene, I think it's unanimous that we have a July meeting in person.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. And we just got to figure out, just make sure we spaced. I don't know if the public will start to come back in. And what is the limit for indoor gatherings right now?
50 people.
Okay.
So why don't we just ask for public comment the way we have been and ask people to...
Oh, I'm sorry. Indoor. I don't know what the indoor limit is. I apologize. I was talking out.
I think it's 25% or 50, but Gabrielle,
25 or something.
I think it's 25.
Could we, Gabrielle? Could we restrict public completely and say they must attend via email?
Well, are we going to have it like this, that it's out there through me and like public can attend virtually and ask comments? Because we can't restrict the amount of people that are coming in, but we also have to give them access to real time. Again, no one came today, so I know it's sort of talking, in hypotheticals, but if the public, had an issue that they wanted to come, I don't think we'd be able under public meeting laws to restrict access to the amount of people. So we'd have to give them access to real-time ability to see what's going on and real-time ability to ask questions if they wanted to.
Yeah, we'd have everything in place that we have in now, a stream like you see, as well as the availability to email me to indicate that they want to make a public comment.
Yeah, if we do want to let the public into the meeting or something, maybe we move it. Move it across the street, put it in the cafetorium or something.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here thinking, Gabrielle, if we're going to have a meeting, in physical meeting, I think that according to the governor's mandate, we should allow the public to be present and then have them follow social distancing and the guidelines that he has. Right. For me, moving forward in September, I want to show the community that we're coming back to more of a normal scenario. Again, So.
Well, as of right now, I don't know what if the amount of people allowed to congregate together indoors is going to change from what it is now. It may. It probably will by August or by July. I'm not sure. But I just want to make sure that we don't inadvertently violate an executive order by having too many people inside, even if we are socially distant from each other.
Okay, well, I can guarantee that. We'll make sure we count, and anybody who's the 51st person, I'll tell them they have to leave. Okay, so we'll follow all the mandates.
So as of now, we'll plan on meeting in July in person, but unless we can't meet the governor's requirements.
Okay, perfect. Good.
Okay.
And we are planning a special meeting on the 29th. An advertisement is going in the paper next week. That will be virtual?
Yes. That'll be virtual, right?
Yeah. I think that meeting's easier to be virtual. So.
That's going to be a quick meeting.
Yeah.
And that's June 29th.
Correct. 9 o'clock.
We'll meet with the candidates on the 26th and vote on the 29th. Is there any other new business? Okay, so I'm moving us to executive session. Whereas the Senator Byron M. Baer, Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, the Act, provides that the Manasquan Board of Education hold an executive session from which the public is excluded to discuss matters that are confidential or in one of nine subject matters listed in Section B of the Act. And whereas it is recommended by the Superintendent of Manasquan Board of Education go into executive session in the state of Manasquan, New Jersey to discuss matters that are permissible for discussion in executive session. And whereas the length of executive session is estimated to be 30 minutes, after which the public meeting of the board shall reconvene and proceed with business. And whereas the board hereby declares that its decision of the following subjects will be made public at a time when the public's interest in disclosure is greater than any privacy or governmental interest being protected from disclosure. Now, therefore, be resolved by the Manasquan Board of Education that the board shall go into an executive session to discuss the following items: personnel matters, hiring, resignation, leave of absence. Items discussed in the executive session will result in board action when the board reconvenes in the public session. Do we have a motion to go into executive session?
Motion.
Second.
Donna and Martin? All in favor?
Aye. Is it broadcast again?
Yeah, just 1 second.
Okay.
I need to bother you with roll call.
Oh yeah, that's right. Roll call.
Just
please wait until we're yeah.
Yeah, we're recording.
Anybody leave?
We're recording out here, Jess. So whenever you're ready.
Okay, roll call, Sandy.
Mr. Balderman.
Yes.
Mrs. Passone.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mr. Fiore. Mr. Hobiter. Mr. Angolia.
Yes.
Mr. Lopretto.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Do we have a motion for pass?
Mr. Pass. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Gary. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Lenhart here.
Do we have a motion for the Manasquan personnel items number 57?
Alexis,
motion.
Yes.
Second.
Don, Alexis.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Passone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Patani?
Yes.
Mr. Lafretta?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Carried.
Manasquan Sending District's personnel, do we have a motion for item 58?
Make a motion, Todd.
Todd, second.
Bruce.
Mr. Balderman.
Mr. Balderman. Mr. Balderman.
Yes.
Mrs. Passan.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mr. Ungolia.
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart.
Yes.
Mr. Lopretto.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Carried.
We have a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Third.
Aye. You got that, Sandy?
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Have a good night, guys.